Hi, this is Bridget with the Lynn Daily Item. Friday, February 20th. New Tech Might Help Fill Gaps in Swampscott by Aaron Hickey. Swampscott. The Board of Assessors met Thursday to continue discussions on staffing hours and vote on real estate tax exemptions through the first months of 2026. Board Chair Neil Sheehan and member Charlie Patsios were present, along with the Select Board liaison Mary Ellen Fletcher and Town Assessor Paul Plouffe. For homeowners and businesses, the small office plays an outsized role. The Assessor's Department processes and reviews exemptions and abatements and determines the value of personal and commercial property, decisions that ultimately shape property tax bills. It was business as usual for the small but busy assessor's office at Swampscott Town Hall. The department, Plouffe explained, is entirely part-time, with himself and administrative assistant Lisa Taylor handling day-to-day operations with the board's support and guidance. It's not an easy task, running an entire governmental department on the strictly budgeted hours of two employees. What we have is a department that's done a Herculean task, Patsio said. Plouffe said the office would function best with one full-time assessor and two part-time assistants. As it is, the meeting opened with a discussion on increasing the paid hours of department staff, which will need to be approved by the town administrator. The board also discussed revitalizing the conversation around town hall regarding an investment in Nearmap, a technology company that provides high-resolution aerial imagery. The technology could be used by a number of departments, Plouffe thinks, but would be especially helpful for the assessors to track development and inspect properties digitally. Especially when you're talking about such a small staff, it's really about what the assessor is able to do from their desk, Plouffe said. In recent months, much of the department's time has been spent concerning abatements, formal reductions of property tax for a specific fiscal year, and exemptions. The assessor's office processes and renews tax exemptions annually for specific groups like religious organizations, disabled veterans, and blind residents. Department staff noted that many calls, walk-ins, and filings had been concerning the Community Preservation Act, passed by Swampscott voters in November 2024. The 1.5% tax applies to all residential and commercial properties, with exemptions for the first $100,000 of property value, which is an automatic exemption, and for low-income households and qualifying seniors, who are required to submit documentation. Board members noted that the number of abatements had not significantly increased from recent years, though there were many new exception forms approved and signed by committee members at the meeting. Just questions, no answers. Commentary. Sophia Harris. If you haven't already heard, and if that's the case, please come out from under the rock you've been living beneath. Today's show host, Savannah Guthrie's mother, Nancy Guthrie, has been missing since the early morning hours of February 1st. The search is now nearly 20 days in. Yes, 20 days. As of the most recent updates, what the public knows, and it's safe to assume it's only a fraction of what investigators know, is this. Police have officially ruled out the Guthrie family as suspects. Investigators have searched multiple homes, executed warrants, questioned individuals, and examined a vehicle connected to the investigation. Messages demanding millions in Bitcoin were reportedly sent to media outlets, though authorities have not confirmed their authenticity. Surveillance footage showed a masked individual at Nancy Guthrie's door the morning she vanished, and the gloves discovered roughly 2 miles from her home contained DNA belonging to an unidentified man. And that's about it. 20 days later, that's the list. No arrest, no suspect in custody, no public breakthrough. No moment where investigators step to a podium and say the words everyone has been waiting to hear. We found her. Instead, there is silence. And in that silence, speculation rushes in to fill the void. The internet, as it always does, has become its own detective agency, though one without licensing, oversight, or occasionally restraint. Amateur sleuths dissect grainy surveillance images like they're analyzing the Zapruder film. Comment sections have transformed into courtrooms where strangers are tried and convicted on vibes alone. Psychics have offered visions. Theories have ranged from the plausible to the cinematic to the outright absurd. This is what happens when a case captures national attention but yields few visible answers. The absence of information becomes information. Every detail, no matter how small, is stretched, examined, and re-examined, as if the truth might be hiding in the margins. What makes this case especially jarring is not just the mystery, but the profile. Nancy Guthrie is not someone who would disappear unnoticed. She is the mother of one of the most recognizable faces in American television. Savannah Guthrie has spent years delivering the morning news to millions of viewers, sitting at the center of the very media ecosystem that is now covering her own personal nightmare. If anyone, one might assume, would benefit from maximum visibility, maximum urgency, and maximum resources, it would be someone connected to that level of public prominence. Every major outlet is watching. Every development is amplified. Every update becomes breaking news. And yet, even with all of that attention, all of that reach, all of those resources, Nancy Guthrie remains missing. It is a sobering reminder of something we prefer not to confront. Sometimes people vanish. Not metaphorically, not emotionally, literally. They are there one day, living their routines, answering their phones, existing fully within the fabric of their lives, and then they are not. No explanation that satisfies. No conclusion that restores order. Just questions. The unsettling truth is that visibility does not guarantee answers. Fame does not guarantee resolution. Attention does not guarantee rescue. If anything, this case exposes how fragile certainty really is. How, even in an age of doorbell cameras, DNA databases, digital footprints, and constant surveillance, can someone still, somehow, slip through the cracks? 20 days later, we are left where we began, with an empty space, a family waiting, and a mystery that refuses to resolve itself on schedule. And that may be the strangest part of all. Olympic Star Comes to Lynn by Daisha Smith, Lynn. Holding her 1992 Olympic bronze medal, former figure skater Nancy Kerrigan stood in front of members of the Rotary Club of Lynn on Thursday night and explained details about the medals that only an Olympic athlete would know. The medals, she said, are quite heavy and actually detach from the ribbon. The world saw this happen recently to U.S. Olympic figure skater Alyssa Liu, who broke hers and needed to get it replaced. Kerrigan was also surprised when she discovered that hers could unclip. "I don't know if they're supposed to," Kerrigan said while simultaneously reattaching the bronze medal back to the ribbon. "But it really surprised me." Those in attendance got the chance to not only see Kerrigan's bronze and 1994 silver Olympic medal up close, but were also able to meet and talk with the decorated athlete. The event, held at Old Time Italian Restaurant on Boston Street, featured a sit-down interview with Kerrigan, led by Rotary Club President Marnie Moore. Then, members got to ask her questions about her career and hear her thoughts on this year's Olympians, including Lou, who was competing in the free skate competition right before Kerrigan was set to arrive in Lynn for the event. Lou had just won gold, making her the first American to do so in women's figure skating in 24 years. The joy that she competes with is something that's also caught the attention of Kerrigan. Alyssa Liu is an example for all of us right now, because she's like, I get to do this every day. She goes out there like, I'm having so much fun, I get to skate, and she's not worried. At one point during the interview, Kerrigan opened up about the importance of mental health in sports, as well as her own experience while she was competing. After winning bronze at the 1992 Olympic Games in Albertville, France, Kerrigan worked with a sports psychologist to learn how to mentally prepare to continue competing, even after winning her first Olympic medal. One thing she found that helped her most was listening to comedy beforehand. The press would be like, "What is she listening to?" Because I'm not, like, jamming out to music. I was laughing and keeping things light, because I found, through trial and error with the sports psychologist, I would skate best when I just watched some TV show while I was doing my makeup that would make me laugh and feel light and almost like loose and not emotional, said Kerrigan, who in 1994, after a practice session, was struck in the legs with a metal baton at the U.S. Figure Skating Championships. Kerrigan also shared special memories and stories from throughout her time competing in the Olympics, including having her dress designed by Vera Wang at the 1992 Olympics, and her ultimate favorite moment of walking in the opening ceremony that same year. The best part of the Olympics for me, definitely, was marching in the opening ceremony. By far, she said. It beats being on the ice. It was an amazing feeling to be behind someone holding the flag and with all these athletes from all the other sports. So it was so cool to be with all the best of hockey players and ski jumpers and bobsledders. And everybody's like, they're cheering. It was super exciting. Kerrigan also opened up about how she's navigating life off the ice, including as a mother. In fact, it was through their daughters that she and Moore got connected at ballet recitals. I remember being backstage at Nutcracker, and she was there with her baby, and I'm there with my baby, and just getting to know her as a mom, Moore told the Daily Item. Moore said Kerrigan's connection with the Rotary Club goes back to when she was sponsored by the Rotary Club of Stoneham when she was younger. She's continued to remain involved in the Rotary Club over the years, even attending events like bowling. With the 2026 Winter Olympics going on, the Rotary Club felt like it was the perfect time to see if Kerrigan was available to come to Lynn and speak. It was Moore who then checked with Kerrigan's husband, Jerry Solomon, to see if she could fit a trip to Lynn in her schedule. The goal was for people to learn more about Kerrigan beyond what the world already knows of her, as well as hear about her ventures off the ice, which includes releasing her first children's book, Stronger Than She Thinks. As the event concluded, two students from Lynn English High School presented Kerrigan with a bouquet of flowers to thank her for coming. We want to thank you for showing up, taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today, and thank you for your inspirational and motivational words. Kerrigan was all smiles afterwards and even stayed to meet members personally and take photos with them, marking the perfect ending to a special evening with the two-time Olympian. Essex Tech, a topic of conversation in Lynnfield, by Elizabeth Della Piana, Lynnfield. The school committee received an update from the district school committee representative for Lynnfield, Gary Hathaway, regarding the Essex Tech admissions policy. This all started about 5 or 6 months ago when the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education informed us that all career technical and education schools are going to have to go to a lottery system for their admissions, Hathaway said. The admissions team went over the numbers, which are based on historical data on how many kids have been going from each community. Proposal 1 came up with the number 14 for Linfield. We then had a meeting at the Larkin. The meeting was over and our director of admissions walked up to our table, where there were 4 or 5 of us from the school committee, and handed us a letter from Peabody, Salem, Beverly, and Danvers, basically saying, "We, the 4 largest communities, choose to force the other 13 smaller communities to make the decisions that we don't want to have to make," he said. Hathaway said the admissions committee got together once more to come up with a revised number, proposal number 2, which Hathaway stated was either 26 or 27. Proposal 3 came up with the number 23, and though there was a proposal 4, the subcommittee voted to take proposal 3. "I think it's a horrendous decision to make everybody use a lottery. Some of the specifics are if you have 27 or fewer unexcused absences, you can get in the lottery. At 28, they won't let you in. Basically, you can miss 5 weeks out of the school year and you're still going to qualify," he said. Hathaway said they don't know anything else in the disciplinary area right now. Hathaway stated that this year there were 49 applicants. Last year there were 38, and the year before that, 28. Even at 23 spots, there's still going to be 26 families that their kids are not going to be able to go, Hathaway said. "Unfortunately, the solution to the problem is not having the state force this on everybody else. The state should be building more of these schools to give kids a better chance to get out and become productive members of society." Committee Chair Kristen Elworthy asked whether all the students who apply are Linfield Middle School students, or whether it includes students with Linfield residency who may attend other schools. "I think it was 44 from the middle school. There was 1 from Higgins, 1 from Galvin, Shore Country Day School," Hathaway said. Superintendent Tom Geary said there were a few charter students who applied, and he believes 43 students from the middle school were among the 49 applicants. Committee member Jamie Heyman asked what the admission policy looked like before the lottery, to which Hathaway said it was an application process, and representatives were sent out to all the middle schools to interview kids. He noted that the interview was around 40% of the grade. "We've determined that there's going to be kids who are not going to test really well, but who are going to just have a way with horses or have an aptitude for plumbing. They weren't rigid about how they did it in the past. They had criteria that they had worked on year after year after year to get the best kids, the kids that wanted to be there," Hathaway said. Vice Chair Jim Dillon pointed out that if students miss more than 5 weeks of school or have disciplinary issues, they can still attend Linfield High School, noting that Essex Tech is still a public school. "I don't see why Essex Tech is in a special exalted position in these terms. I don't get it. Like any other public taxpayer-funded high school, and they had the advantage of kids who apply to go there, I think they should have the same responsibility to children that all of our public high schools that are taxpayer-funded have, to educate whoever walks in the front doors of this school. And I think that should be their philosophy and approach to the kids that go there, just like it's ours and every other public high school," he said. Committee member Kate DiPrizio asked if there was any discussion on how this would be reviewed and evaluated at some point. Hathaway said he's sure the administration will review it, but that it is a done deal. "My only hope is that people in the State House will realize this is not a very good option and force DESE to back down and let the schools do it a different way, a more equitable way," he said. Committee member Kim Baker Donahue asked why the larger schools, like Peabody, wanted fewer students eligible for the lottery. I'm not exactly sure what Peabody's reasoning is, but I do believe they are offering some vocational courses now, Hathaway said. Elworthy clarified during the meeting that this was not a part of the Linfield Public Schools budget, but a line item in the town budget. We're not looking at our budget in the sense of saying that this line item in our budget is changing. Although we have been made aware by the town that they're trying to recoup some of the cost from Essex Tech from our budget, essentially from this increase, she said. Elworthy then asked Hathaway if a Linfield student who left Essex Tech would have their spot go to another Linfield student. Hathaway was unsure, though he stated in the past there was a wait list, though he was unsure if it was community specific. Geary said that though he doesn't have this year's enrollment numbers, last year there were 36 Linfield students at Essex Tech across all four grades. If they average the next few years using the new lottery number, there will be about 92 Linfield students. That is over $1 million increase over 4 years, is what the state is throwing at us. It's a substantial sum of money that the town is dealing with and will continue to deal with, he said. Elworthy noted that the town pays tuition per student, which is just under $20,000 this year. I want to be clear. I don't want to speak for anyone else, but Essex Tech is a part of our public school system, and it's an important part of our public school system, and one that our students absolutely should have access to. There's always that tension when there's a budgetary hit, and you have to figure out how to balance that, as well as some of the other issues that you brought up with any change, she said. Elworthy emphasized that it is an important opportunity for students to have. Lynn Senior Services Hears How to End Hunger Now, by Brianna Alvarez, Lynn. Congressman Jim McGovern and Seth Moulton visited Greater Lynn Senior Services, GLSS, on Thursday afternoon as part of McGovern's End Hunger Now Massachusetts tour, highlighting the growing challenges of food insecurity across the Commonwealth. The visit, held at GLSS headquarters in Lynn, included a tour and cooking class at the Phoenix Food Hub, followed by a small group discussion with the seniors and Mayor Gerald C. Nicholson. The event concluded with a press conference where the lawmakers addressed the impact of rising grocery costs and federal policy changes on families in Massachusetts' 6th District and beyond. McGovern opened the press conference by thanking local leaders and staff, including GLSS CEO Kathy Burns and Valerie Parker Callahan, Senior Director of Planning and Development at GLSS. This food hub is a lifeline for people in and around the Lynn area, and the reason I'm doing this statewide tour is to shine a spotlight on an organization that's like, McGovern said. Organizations that are doing amazing, incredible, inspiring work to end hunger, improve the security in every community in Massachusetts. The Phoenix Food Hub offers cooking classes, nutrition counseling, and assistance with food benefits enrollment. McGovern described it as an amazing model of what it looks like when a community comes together to say that nobody is going to go hungry, and noted the importance of partnerships with healthcare providers, adding, I appreciate Mass General Brigham's support for this incredible program. During the visit, the lawmakers met directly with the senior citizens. We are here today to highlight the incredible work going on here, but we're also here to listen. And I will tell you, they were all good teachers. We learned a lot, he said. McGovern said the message he has heard throughout his statewide tour is consistent. What we heard today, and what I've heard in almost every stop along this tour, is that food prices are too damn high. Wages are not going up, and families are struggling more than ever. He sharply criticized recent federal actions affecting nutrition assistance. Nearly 100,000 people in this state are at risk of losing food assistance because this president and House Republicans passed their big ugly bill, McGovern added. And when they did that, they stole nearly $200 billion in food assistance, the largest cut to food assistance ever in American history. And that bill eliminated SNAP Ed, a federal program that funds cooking classes, just like the one we saw here today. And we pledge, if we can change the makeup of Congress, to come back and restore that funding. McGovern emphasized the broader consequences of hunger, especially for seniors and children. Some senior citizens who go without food end up taking their prescription on an empty stomach, and they end up in an emergency room. Kids who go to school on Monday and are hungry because they haven't eaten all weekend. They can't pay attention in school, he said. He added, "We're the richest country in the history of the world. We have 46 million Americans who are hungry or food insecure. As a member of Congress, I am ashamed of that." Moulton echoed McGovern's concerns, calling Lynn's approach a national model. When Jim McGovern, the expert in the entire Congress and the country on these issues, says that Lynn is knocking it out of the park, we should be very proud of Lynn, Moulton said. What we saw today was inspiring. It's people coming together, a community coming together to support each other, he stated, to collaborate, and to show a path forward, at a time when a lot of people are losing hope. Jim mentioned there are 40 million Americans who depend on food assistance today, Moulton began. We share another number, 400 million. The cost of the new White House ballroom that Trump wants to build, because that's his priority, as opposed to feeding American families, he added. Being able to eat is just a human right. It should not be debatable. It is a human right to be able to feed yourself and your family. Okay, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you.